You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. I really appreciate you joining us. We're going to have a great show today. I got lots to talk about. Not like we're ever wanting for material. I would ask this, that you check out thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. And support our injured and disabled law enforcement officers. Check out the film, The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed, on Amazon. All of the proceeds from viewing that movie, and I guarantee you, you will have an eye-opening experience when you see it. And all of the profits go to The Wounded Blue. Now, let's take a quick walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. There are so many stories in the news this week about law enforcement that are mind-boggling. And as you know, on this show, we talk about all things law enforcement. Some of the stuff is positive for law enforcement. Most of the time, though, unfortunately, the media is very centered around trying to portray law enforcement in a negative light. And perhaps that is why when a law enforcement officer-involved shooting takes place, there is a major hoorah about it in many of the communities where these take place. This is what's going on right now in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. About 10 days ago or so, they were involved in an officer-involved shooting. And the video tape of that, that's the body-worn camera video, has just been released by court order. So let's talk about this for just a second. So here's, let me set it up for you. Charlotte-Mecklenburg police get a call at about 9 a.m. on March 25th. A witness calls 911 to report that an armed man had walked behind the counter and pointed a gun at an employee inside a Burger King. And the woman said, "He's got a gun," repeatedly to the 911 dispatcher. Within minutes, another woman called 911 from the parking lot to report that the suspect, and this suspect's later was identified as Dankier Franklin, and he came out of the restaurant, pulled a gun as he walked towards her, and she took off from the restaurant and called 911. So employees and customers are running out of the restaurant. The police call, get there within minutes, and they see the suspect. Well, the suspect, when they approach him, is kneeling down between two cars, and he is literally inches away from a man who's seated in the passenger seat of the car. The officers see the gun. They tell him more than 20 times to drop the gun. 20 times. And suddenly he just kind of brings the gun up. They open fire and they kill him. I can't imagine a better outcome here, that no one else got hurt except for the suspect. But white cops, black suspect. And within hours, the false narrative began that he wasn't armed, that the police overreacted, that they gunned him down. Protests started. Community unrest started. And so the police were trying to conduct the investigation, the shooting investigation, and they wanted to keep the some of the details while they're doing the investigation. They wanted to keep the videotape for the evidentiary purposes before they released it. Well, activist groups went to court And they said, show us the video because we don't believe you. Well, they released the video. And you know what the video showed? Exactly what the cop said. It shows that the two police officers get there. They're communicating well with each other. Their tactics were sound. They see the suspect kneeling down within very close proximity to an individual whose life was in danger. He's got the gun. And when they tell him to put it down and put it down and put it down, he doesn't listen to him. Instead, he begins to raise it. At that point, they shoot him. Well, it doesn't seem to matter because even though they have released the videotape, there are still planned protests. There are still people complaining about the way police acted. In fact, the officers who were involved in this, someone released their personal data to social media, including their address, placing them in danger. This is madness. Of course, the ability to protest is built into our system of justice. But what are you protesting? Don't police have not only the authority, but the right and the duty to protect themselves and other people? That is what the police do. For the quote leaders in the community, unquote, to claim racism, to claim over excessive force every single time a police officer uses force, what does that do? That all that does is demonstrate that they really don't care about justice. They really don't care about the truth or about the facts. They want to gin up the narrative. Now, we saw this before. This is nothing new. But how dangerous can this be? Let's just look at what happened in Ferguson when the Michael Brown shooting took place. Officer Darren Wilson's life was ruined. He did exactly what he should have done to defend himself. And the false narrative was immediately put out after that of hands up, don't shoot. That false narrative was repeated in the media over and over and over again, picked up by congressmen, by sports figures, by celebrities, even though it wasn't true. And what happened? The town burned. The city burned. People died as a result of this. Where is the responsibility of these so-called community leaders? For them not to be held accountable is a detriment to our justice system. You want to protest something that is legitimate. To simply pretend that every police officer shooting is unjustified is ignorant. And that is what's going on today in Charlotte, Mecklenburg. All I can hope for is that these protests do not turn violent, that they work themselves out into a peaceful protest. But only time will tell this. We'll probably be talking about this again next week. As far as madness goes, you know, the snowflake mentality that it seems to be pervading this country is astounding, absolutely astounding. I'm going to talk about two stories that I would never have thought I would ever be discussing because they're mind-boggling in their idiocy. The first one comes out of Laguna Beach, California. Now, I know that almost every crazy story about law enforcement and the snowflake mentality comes out of California. But this one's a beauty. Let me give you the headline. Citizens complain police cars' American flag logos are, quote, too aggressive, unquote. So I'm looking at a picture of a patrol SUV. It says, Laguna Beach, police. And the police are in big letters. And it's got the stars and stripes as part of the color scheme of the word police. So there's some blue with some stars in the background and some white and a stripe and some red. It's a cool logo. Well, that is offending some of the, quote, artists community, unquote, in Laguna Beach. I mean, you got to have a lot of time on your hands to show up to a city council meeting to complain about the color scheme of a logo. You need to get a life. So here, an artist, this is how they refer to her in the article, artist Carrie Woodburn said at the March 19th council meeting it was, quote, shocking to see the boldness of the design. This is according to the Los Angeles Times, who apparently also doesn't have enough to cover, apparently. And here's what she went on to say. We have such an amazing community of artists here. And I thought the aesthetic didn't really represent our community. It feels very aggressive, unquote. It feels very aggressive. How do you say that with a straight face? How do you go to a community meeting with the community council there, the city council, and actually say that a logo is too aggressive? Oh my God in heaven, I just can't stand it. So here's the worst part of the story. Do you think that the council president and the city council had the courage to say, hey lady, that's the logo, get out, go away, get a life? No, of course not. In fact, they didn't even have the guts to make the decision there. They have to have a conference about it. The whole city council must have too much time on their hands. If they can take a simple, ridiculous request like this, or demand, and actually give it credence by spending the taxpayers' money on making this decision, it's just this is California. I don't even know I don't even know what to say. So let's go on to the next insanity about the snowflake generation. This one, we're now going completely across the country, left coast and right coast. It doesn't seem to matter. They're all facing the same snowflakedness. Is that a word? Well, if not, it should be. All right, here's a beauty. This story comes out of Mount Holyoke College campus in Massachusetts. This is another unbelievable story. Okay, here's the headline. University PD chief suspended for, quote, liking, unquote, tweets which upset students. Now, here's the story. I shouldn't laugh, but I think if I didn't laugh, I'd be crying. A newly appointed campus police chief named Hecht has been placed on administrative leave. He's only been on the job a couple months. He's a 30-year cop. Gets hired as the chief. After students discovered he, quote, liked, unquote, tweets that supported President Trump, the National Rifle Association, and legal immigration. Yep, you heard me right. Some of the students went through his Twitter feed, and they found that he liked some tweets that they didn't like. He liked two tweets made by the NRA, as well as several posts President Trump made regarding the government shutdown and the U.S.-Mexico border wall. And a Mount Holyoke student posted screenshots from the chief's Twitter account onto social media and declared it was, here, you're going to like this, quote, this is from the student council, unacceptable for someone in charge of keeping any community safe, let alone a campus as diverse as Mount Holyoke, to be publicly displaying his support for hateful regimes and organizations, as well as for individuals who demonize migrants from Mexico or other Latin American nations. Mm-hmm. So, another student writes in an opinion piece and gets this printed in the Mount Holyoke News. I believe these tweets indicate that Hecht should not work at this campus. It concerns me that the college hired someone who has publicly contributed to racist and anti-LGBTQ plus rhetoric. Where'd that come from? So, okay, once again, so the students, this is when I say the inmates are running the asylum, well, that's exactly what is happening here. You would think that the administration of this college, who just hired this guy because he was the best guy for the job, you would think that they would, in some political speak, say, you know, everyone has a right to free speech, including the chief of police, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But no, they don't do that. They immediately cave in to the demands of these children. And when I say children, I mean that mentally, because they haven't developed their brains enough to even accept the fact that people have a right to free speech. Even police do. And the administration caves and suspends the guy. He's done. They'll never bring him back. For liking a tweet? Is this where our nation has deteriorated to? That we will find fault with even an opinion on a social media like? That's all it takes to lose your job in America? This is perverse. And yet, it's the truth. It is what is happening. Well, there's much more to talk about. Let me, and as we continue this insanity, I want to talk about, see, that story that we just heard occurred in Massachusetts. Well, now there's another item that I want to talk about from Massachusetts. And this is absolute madness. They, in Boston, they elected a district attorney named Rachel Rollins. Now, she ran for office. She didn't hide her agenda one little bit. In fact, it is because of her agenda that she was funded so well by none other than the organizations of George Soros, who pumped millions of dollars into campaigns for district attorneys across the United States to push their social agenda. And this is absolutely incredible. So Rawlings comes out on this platform, gets elected, and moves along with it, because why not? She was just given the mandate by the people. Charges to be declined. In other words, so here's how the system works, okay? The police enforce the laws. They see an infraction, or they investigate a crime. They have probable cause to arrest. They arrest. And then the case is submitted to the district attorney or the city attorney, depends on the jurisdiction and what kind of crime it is. The district attorney looks at the elements of the crime, looks to see if the case can be processed properly, and then either works a deal out with the defender for a plea, takes him to trial, or adjudicates it in one way or another. Well, what Rollins has just implemented is she's just not going to prosecute a whole bunch of crimes. I mean, I'm looking at a whole laundry list here. Charges the way it's put here is charges for which the default is to decline prosecution. Trespassing, shoplifting, larceny under 250, disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, receiving stolen property, driving offenses, breaking and entering, wanton or malicious destruction of property, threats, minor in possession of alcohol, drug possession with intent to distribute, and of course, in order to stick it in the eye of the police, we're not going to prosecute resisting arrest either. This is anarchy, is what this is. But it's legitimate anarchy because she has been given her elected position by the people. The people of Boston elected this creature. I for the life of me, I can't understand why an entire populace of a city would vote to make themselves less safe. And that's exactly what this is going to do. This basically gives carte blanche to criminals to do pretty much whatever they want. So you're a store owner in Boston, and a guy comes in there and just picks up $750 worth of stuff and walks out, and you're powerless to do anything about it, because after all, he now has the right to do it by law. The prosecutor said, we're not going to prosecute. People can trespass on your property. People can break into your home, and they won't prosecute it. Police officers, when they get in a fight with a suspect who resists arrest, they won't prosecute it. Well, why not fight? If you're not going to face any consequences, why not commit theft? Why not sell drugs? Because you're not facing any consequences for your actions. This has happened in Boston, but it's also happening in other cities, like Dallas, believe it or not. The same thing just happened in Dallas. It's happened in Philadelphia. And it's happening where literally millions and millions of dollars are being placed into the coffers of politically agenda-driven activist prosecutors. And what we're seeing now is the rise of this type of activist district attorney. Mark me well. This is going to lead to the loss of life. It's going to lead to a deterioration of the quality of life, for sure. And it achieves the ends of the political left, which is to emasculate law enforcement, basically destroy the criminal justice system, as it is known now, release as many prisoners as possible from incarceration, and in essence, thwart what has always been the law enforcement responsibility to keep the streets safe. I'm painting a pretty bleak picture here, my friends. But everything that I tell you is the truth. Pretty scary. Well, let's take a break here. Go on into the interview room where you're going to hear a great guest. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed, everything else that you need a deodorizer for. This stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com and register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I have a very special guest with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. He's not only an expert in law enforcement training and officer survival, he is a good friend, and he is the creator of The Winning Mind. He is a retired law enforcement lieutenant with the Arizona DPS. He is the creator of the character Buck Savage. For my older law enforcement audience, I know you remember him, and he can be contacted at bucksavage.com. Dave Smith, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, great, Randy. I tell you what, great to be on, and again, I'm so excited that you've got this going, and because it's so important, I think, for law enforcement and the community to be able to share your ideas and your insight, and I'm just happy to be part of it.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you about a specific topic today. I read a article about an officer who was shot near the Portland area just the other day, and what caught my attention was not the fact that he was shot, because that's happening almost every single day in America now, which in and of itself is a pretty frightening concept. But it was in the details that I read. Now, of course, we have to keep in mind that we're reading a very short article in newspaper, and I tried to do as much research as I could on it. But I'm going to tell you about it and my audience. So I want to just read for a very short time this article. A Milwaukee police officer suffered a non-life-threatening injury in a shooting near the Milwaukee Safeway late Saturday, and a suspect was arrested on attempted murder and other charges. Police spokesmen say the officer tried to stop a man who was walking because the man matched the description of a man who had been armed with a gun and reported threatening another man earlier in the day. The officer tried to stop the man and deployed a stun gun, a taser, in other words. Moments later, the officer and the man exchanged shots. Other officers found the shooting suspect, Douglas Joseph Teeter, 30, nearby, hiding under a truck and trailer. They used a taser to take him into custody. So, we have an individual, Dave, that was reported to be armed with a gun,
And the officer chose to deploy a taser in apprehending him. He was shot. Then other officers responding to a guy armed with a gun who had just shot one of their officers used a taser on him. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you read that?
You know, again, the first thing that comes to your mind is confusion. Number one, both incidents, the officers are aware there's a potential of deadly force. And you and I both know is that we have to use extreme caution in that regard. When I get a call of a subject with a weapon, possibly with a weapon, and again, law enforcement always understands the ambiguity of the call, the information, the fog of between a complainant and a dispatcher. Citizens haven't been taught how to communicate effectively to our dispatchers. They do the best they can to translate it and get it to us. But we always take, or we're supposed to take, the side of precaution. What the heck happened? And I'm sure everybody who ever read that that little news blurb, the officers were in cognitive dissonance. You know, that their brain can't hold that idea. Why would we tase a guy who might have a gun? Now, I wasn't there. And again, you prefaced this just right by saying, you know, the part of the problem is I don't trust what I read in the press. You know, which is tends to be antagonistic toward law enforcement, but. You're seeing this more and more where officers are making low-level choices of force control against a subject who's potentially lethal, and then we're getting hurt or killed. And this is the problem that comes from the ambiguity that started years ago on what we call the war on cops, which still continues to this day, frankly. It's very frustrating between the media still propagandists for the anti-police forces, and I'm not seeing the Justice Department make adjustments like I expected. And junk science abounds everywhere, everything from studies on systems analysis. I just read this morning, University of Virginia's systems, how we should use systems analysis. And obviously the person who wrote it actually didn't study systems analysis, Ludwig von Bertalanffy's theory of systems, which is a wonderful way to look at things. But had they had, trying to offer us to do things like medicine does, or do things like airlines or aviation does, that's all great, except that one of Bertalanffy's first concepts is complex systems don't translate to other complex systems. And law enforcement is perhaps one of the most complex systems at all. And we frankly, if the media and if the academics want to grow up like adults and actually be willing to look at the whole universe, they'd realize that we're not in control of the subject's action, the people we're dealing with. And yes, unarmed people get killed all the time. So do armed people. And not all the time. In fact, it's quite rare that unarmed people get killed. But the question becomes always that what did police do wrong? Well, frankly, you read most of these incidences, the police are simply in a position where trying to gain control in an ambiguous, threatening environment. I don't know what human being is going to perform optimally if they're forced through administrative concerns and legal concerns. Now you see these legislatures trying to pass these laws to control our use of force. And there's almost an absurdist quality to it that are you serious? In fact, so much of what I see now politically has become just literally a theater of the absurd. Everybody's waiting for Godot now in D.C. And we have to pretend it's somehow normal, which is truly proof of the fact that the First Amendment's pretty well dead, just right, scorn in academics and the effects of society. And unfortunately for a law enforcement officer, the ability to make critical decisions in a fraction of a second are being interfered with, you know, and this
scares the hell out of me. Let me interrupt you there, because I think you've hit on something that is directly related to this conversation, referenced the deployment of the tasers twice on an armed suspect. We are, as a profession, subjected to intense overseen by not only the government, and I say the government, I mean all levels of the government, from the police departments themselves to the city administrations, and then even beyond that to the federal government. So when a police officer in this particular case is making a potential deadly force decision, they have to factor in not just their own survival, but all the political considerations as well.
Here's the problem, and you just hit it right on the head. You can't go into a life and death situation where we all agree these decisions are occurring in microseconds, literally spontaneous reactions to deadly threats. And again, we all agree the person who initiates the action has got a third of a second head start. So the bad guy drawing a gun on an officer who's standing there fiddling with a taser when it's got to be a deadly force situation, the officer's way behind the curve, way behind the curve. And so the officer has to process that. You know, I don't care if you use the military's, you know, Colonel Boyd's OODA loop or whatever you want to do, recognition prime decision making. The officer has to recognize the threat. And hopefully we've trained that officer to that level where it's just an immediate habit response. It's stimulus response. Whoa, deadly threat, my deadly threat. This is why cover has to be trained so effectively as part of our firearms use. You know, what cover gives us that fraction of a second to recover from that head start a bad guy has. Then you're saying, and again, here we have, meanwhile, the officer in a mental process processing, oh my God, am I within policy? Am I within bounds illegally? What will the review board say? What will the citizen review board say? And the one thing about motor theory, about, you know, response theory is that if I have to think about it, I'm slowed way, way down.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing. These guys, you throw cognitive process, it interferes with a well-trained technique. It may make the officer miss, or worse, the officer may not respond at all effectively. And this is what you're asking yourself when you're reading these shootings.
You know, I think one of the things that brought my attention to this was when I read that it was an Oregon police officer near Portland, because the Portland area, especially the Portland Police Department, has basically neutered their police officers when it comes down to use of force.
Right.
There was just an article that I read the other day, which I found fascinating, and that is that the Portland Police Department can't hire enough people to fill the ranks. In fact, out of 60 applicants, Dave, this is a whole nother discussion, but it's germane here anyway. They only got 60 applicants for over 100 positions that they have. They only got 60 applicants, and only 3 of those applicants passed the background check. 3. And
all right, here's your problem. Yeah, you're right on this. That used to be, there should, 10 years ago, 1,200 would have applied for those slots.
Exactly.
That's the problem. You're hitting it right on the head. What you can't, governments like Portland's, Oregon's, you know, Washington State, these antagonistic, liberal governmental bodies, you know, and it's hard to explain it, you know, because liberal doesn't clarify it, but they have this enlightened view that anyone who would be a police officer, first off, starts with malice. So they begin to legislate and to administrate from a perspective that anybody who is a cop must have some malicious intent, must get up in the morning. The idea of selfless service is beyond these people, and then they come up and contrive these things. We need to follow Plato's guardian plan, and no one wants to be that. When you read it, if you actually read Plato, you know that those are more like Gestapo. Those aren't like cops, you know. In a free society, we have to understand you have good and bad people, and who will protect us from the bad? Good people who are willing to risk their lives and also willing to defend themselves and others with all levels of force. And there always have been those people. And nobody likes these metaphors, but Randy, you know, you grew up just believing in something. You were, there was a reason inside of you. You can't probably even articulate when it first formed that you were excited by the adventures of police officers and military heroes throughout history and all this, but also part of you saw yourself defending and protecting, and that's an intrinsic part of it, the human spirit. There are certain people who choose that. They don't wake up in the morning and say, gee, I hope I can shoot an unarmed person today. Nobody does that. Everybody's terrified. If the citizenry only knew that my whole career, my whole life my adult life. I started police work in January of 1975, and we were one of the biggest concerns we always had was, you know, oh, there's been a shooting. Oh my God, what was the nature of the subject who got shot by the police officer? You know, oh my goodness, you know, we were all held our breath. That's all these years, decades later, 44 years later, we still, now the presumption from the media, from the administration, and from the government is, you know, well, there must be something wrong with that officer, because that subject, even when the subjects aren't, if they can find malice. So the society's going to have to turn it around pretty quick. I'm really worried about this.
When everything you're saying is right on, but it's frightening. As you said, is when you see a symptom, because that's what this is. The fact that the Portland police can't get any qualified applicants is a symptom. But it's not just a symptom of a larger society. Let's narrowly focus on Portland. You have a mayor who has appointed himself police commissioner. He has hired what basically is a lackey, for lack of a better word, who does his bidding, basically a non-entity of a police chief. So all the power is centered around Mayor Ted Wheeler. And he is virulently anti-law enforcement. And yet, when the media covered this situation with them not getting any qualified applicants, what do you think their response was? It certainly wasn't blaming their own policies. You know, it's shocking that even when it's thrown up in their face like that, they still will not take responsibility for creating this environment.
Well, you just hit a point right on the head. There's no learning curve with these types, and really Wheeler has almost become a parody of what we're seeing throughout the country in these left-wing communities, these left-wing large cities. You know, you're like, you know, we all laugh about de Blasio, but the point is a guy like Wheeler's got an odd malice now that has corrupted the entire city with his absurdities, you know, and that's the whole problem. You know, you can live in the Aristotelian real world or some odd world that you come up in your head and think that will match. And again, this is a guy who wants his cops to ride around on unicorns, I guess, but you just said that there's never a moment self-reflection. There's never a moment self-doubt. I don't know if it's an odd narcissism that comes with this philosophy or just the inability to learn from events. But when you start from a premise from the very beginning that American law enforcement is flawed, is prejudiced, is racist, is homophobic, yada, 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 you know, pull out your list. And then it just, well, that is just that's become a substitute for substantive thought. And if I can throw those words out, you're right. I never have to do a moment of self-reflection when things fail. It's because of one of those flawed traits in these other people, that these lower forms, these people with their bronze souls that we need to rule over. And these philosopher kings have no ability to learn. And then, unfortunately, they permeate the government now, too, and the government service. All you got to do is see how the city of D.C. votes to understand what's wrong with the federal government bureaucracy.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because so Wheeler is an open book. I mean, he makes no bones about it. He despises law enforcement. He's created the environment there, which directly affects public safety. I mean, it directly affects it. And yet, the voters vote him in. So, I'm not sure what's more frightening. This guy gaining power, or the voters allowing him to keep it. I don't even know where to go with that.
No, and part of the problem is, regardless of what you and I may say, it doesn't matter to these people. And the thing is that once you can write me off as a certain bigot, a certain racist, a certain ignorant, you just, whatever the label is, it quickly discredits my input, then I'm no longer in the argument. So you and I can have all the criticisms we want. But remember, these people, one of the keys to being learning disabled is to not get feedback. Feedback is how you learn. Knowledge results, whatever you want to call it. Well, these people, they're quickly able, even if results are deteriorating all the time, the quality of life, the crime rates going up, doesn't matter to these people. They'll find excuses. They'll quickly turn to CNN or MSNBC to get a non-reality check. They're reaffirmed and they move on. And as their life deteriorates, they continue to blame and blame factions, groups, races, sexes, whatever they can choose. And again, this is why America, in essence, has become learning disabled, which is a symptom of all socialist systems. You know, it's more and more people I talk to have a cynicism and a darkness and a concern now more than ever. And I just hope we wake up and start learning again, start saying, okay, well, here this did not work. What happened? And you can't compare us to some society of 8 million people in Scandinavia, or compare law enforcement stats with England, for instance, which is policing in the 21st century. All you leaders out there who keep pulling that card and throwing it on the table, well, look what happened in Scotland and England. Yeah, you know what? They're no longer certified because they were falsifying their police records. Imagine if our uniform crime reports were announced that they'd been fixing the books by changing categories of crimes to make some of these liberal programs look like they really work when they actually haven't changed anything. Well, that's what's happened over there. And we're supposed to follow or chase that model. We're the best law enforcement in the world. And everybody needs to understand our constabulary actually protects citizen rights. We set an oath to the Constitution to preserve and protect this society and everyone in it. And that's what concerns me. We weren't hired to just be a particular guardian for a faction. We're for protect everyone, individuals.
Exactly.
And, well, America needs to wake up to that. Our politicians are supposed to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think we all swore an oath to the same thing, the Constitution of the United States. But I think law enforcement officers actually take that more seriously than our elected officials. I want to get back to the taser story here. Just a couple weeks ago, an incident happened in California that was highly publicized, at least within the law enforcement community. And it was police had responded to a man armed with a knife who had been threatening his father. And it's an adult man. The officers saw him walking down the street. Now, this is all captured on videotape, you know, from the body cameras. And they had plenty of coverage. You could see them making a plan. They're trying to negotiate the guy down. He's armed with he's got the knife in his hand. They have a supervisor there. They have all the equipment that modern police departments have. They have a low lethality beanbag gun. They have tasers. They have all of the tools necessary. And they make a plan. They make a plan to try and take him down using low lethality. So they deploy a taser. Ineffective. The guy is really, you know, out of his mind. Then they use beanbags. Ineffective. And if you can take a couple shots with a beanbag, you're pretty well Superman, because they hurt like hell.
They have a lot of push to them.
So he takes a couple of them, ineffective. They then deploy a canine, and the canine makes an attempt. Well, at that point, now the man still has the knife in his hand. The officer decided to rush him and use empty hand techniques on him in order to take him into custody. And they bring him down to the ground, and the guy slashes the neck of the officer who chose to go hands-on with him. Luckily, it didn't kill the officer. But my question to you, Dave, is why would you make the decision to physically go after an armed suspect and try and take him without, you know, by getting into that close proximity? You are placing yourself into harm's way in a major way.
you know, this is the kind of thing where I can't get inside of somebody's mind, but I can watch their actions and go, what were you afraid of other than being killed? I mean, were you more afraid or more concerned about administrative review or people saying, well, you shot a guy with a handgun that was only armed with a knife? Well, wait. Yeah, because that's a deadly threat. It's a level of force. And this is one of the problems. The citizens often get misrepresented by the press to the press, or the press misrepresents to the people, that somehow this is supposed to be a fair fight, that we can only go one step above. And again, this is where I hear these pseudo experts on TV just really clouding the issue. The deadly force, to all the non-police officers listening, is any level of force that can cause death or serious bodily injury. All right? Somebody, if you're on the ground and you've got a gun and an unarmed guy is kicking you in the head and kicking you in the head and kicking you in your head, you got to make a split-second decision, because that next kick could kill you. Ask any ER physician or any pathologist. You know, every year, approximately 4 law enforcement officers are beaten to death with fists and hands, okay? 4 a year. That's 4 too many. You know, and that's the whole thing. And the citizens, well, weren't you trained in this? Weren't you trained in that? Yeah, you know what? Every night I can turn on UFC and watch a highly trained fighter get his butt whipped, okay? That's the whole problem, you know. The problem is even those who are pro-law enforcement get the perspective of, except for that guy at that call, except for that officer when she went to that call. And that's the whole problem, is the media can create this thing, well, 99% of them are good, but here's the bad 1%. Well, the bad 1% turns out to be any law enforcement officer caught in a deadly, ambiguous situation. So these young officers are all worrying. And again, worrying is the deadly, deadly performance inhibitor, man. As you know, you can't worry. You can't go into sports worrying. You can't go into any athletic event. And what's more critical about motor performance than the officers in a life or death confrontation?
You know, this is we're running out of time, Dave, but I mean, this is a concept or a discussion that literally we could do for hours. Maybe I'll do a 2-hour special on use of force, but you know, this is a never-ending battle now for the American law enforcement officer, balancing their own safety with the political considerations that go along with decision making. So I want to thank you for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Where can folks contact you? Because you are a trainer. You and your wife, Betsy, have trained more police officers in this country than probably any two other people in the nation. And you and Betsy have been instrumental in saving the lives of many law enforcement officers because of your training. Where can you be contacted?
Well, anybody wants to get a hold of me or my wife Betsy, we're go to bucksavage.com. You go to our website and it gives you our numbers, our emails, and get a hold of us and talk to us about it. On the other hand, before we leave, I just want to say to everyone listening that if you wear a badge and a gun, you are part of the reason we're free. And don't let these people wear you out, because you are an essential element to our freedom if we're going to keep it.
Amen to that. And on that note, we'll say goodbye, and we'll have you again back here on Blue Lives Radio.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week I have one name to read. Deputy Sheriff Justin DeRosier of the Cowlitz County Sheriff's Office in Washington. Deputy Sheriff Justin DeRosier was shot and killed in the 100 block of Fallert Road after responding to investigative reports of a disabled motorhome shortly after 10 p.m. After arriving at the scene, he contacted dispatchers with emergency traffic and stated he was being fired at. Members of the Cowlitz County Sheriff's Office and the Kalama Police Department responded to the scene and were able to pull him to safety. He was flown to Peace Health Medical Center in Vancouver, where he passed away shortly after midnight. Two suspects were taken into custody near the scene. Third suspect was shot and killed when he was encountered by other officers who were searching for him the following night. Deputy DeRozier had served with the Cowles County Sheriff's Office for 3 years and had previously served with the Whitman County Sheriff's Office for 3. He survived by his wife and 5-month-old daughter. Deputy Sheriff Justin DeRozier, Cowles County Sheriff's Office, Washington. End of watch, April 14th, 2019. May you rest in peace. Well, that about wraps it up for me. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement here on the America Out Loud Network. Here we try not just to entertain, but to bring the truth about the American law enforcement officer to you. Look me up on Facebook under the voice of American law enforcement. If you are a Twitterer, join me on Twitter at LT Randy Sutton. And as always, support our injured and disabled law enforcement officers. Go to The Wounded Blue on Facebook. Like us, follow us, support us. Go to thewoundedblue.org. Go to thewoundedblue.org and see how we can help the American law enforcement officer, if you are one of them, and how you can help support this organization. Thanks again. We'll see you next week right here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.